Good morning. Last week, we began the sugya of Dina de Malchus Adina. And as we explained, that everyone agrees to the concept of Dina de Malchus. Every halacha recognizes the right of a sovereign government to pass laws, and such laws are binding on the Jewish citizens. However, we spoke out that there is an important limitation. Dina Malchus applies by a meches diyesh lekitzva, a tax that is set. It is a fair tax. It is applied uniformly to all of the citizens. However, a meches de'en lekitzva, if the government discriminates, the tax collector picks and chooses how much he's going to charge each person based on just his whim, that is en lekitzva, and even if it is sanctioned by the government, halacha does not recognize such a tax. We pointed out that the bar for Ein LeKitzvah is fairly high. There were tshuvas that discussed laws during the Inquisition and similar types of laws. We're still, the tshuvas go back and forth. It is Ein LeKitzvah. It's not Yesh the back and forth. So we are not quick to jump to conclusions and say it is not a fair tax. Now we mentioned at the end of last week's year a machloikis, the Mabit Paskins, that if there is a meches di Yesh LeKitzvah, but the tax collector goes ahead and he takes more than he's entitled to. So now Abit says, once he's taking more than he's entitled to, they already become Ein LeKitzvah. And if you're able to, you can avoid paying the entire tax, even the amount that is Yesh LeKitzvah, even the amount that the king actually ordered. Other places come to Beis Yosef, the Drisha, and it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, argue, and they say no. Just because the tax collector is a ganiv is not a license for you to be a ganiv. And therefore, you have to pay the amount that you truly owe, and any excess amount that he's trying to extort from you, that you can certainly try to, if you have a way of avoiding paying it, you certainly could do. Now, we said a pshat last week, but I saw the Shulchan Aruch Rav says actually the exact opposite pshat. Well, the Shulchan Aruch Rav in Hilchos Gezeilah explains like this. He says, if a person buys the right to collect taxes from the king, so the king sold him the right to collect $1,000 from each person. If this buyer now goes ahead and tries to extort $2,000 from you, there the Shulchan Aruch Harav says, there we have the Pesach of Shulchan Aruch, that there you can avoid the $1,000 that he's taking Shalokit in, you can avoid. But the $1,000 that he bought from the king, that's a legitimate tax, that's a legitimate debt, and that you would have to pay. Zok the Shulchan Aruch Harav, that's only when someone bought the right to the taxes. However, if the king himself is collecting the taxes, he has his own tax collector, the in-house tax collector that collects for him, and this fellow is corrupt, and although the law is he can take $1,000 from each person, he on his own decides to take $2,000. Zot Shulchan Aruch Rav, in that case, you don't have to pay anything. Because just like if the king himself passes a meches de'en lekitzvah, just like if the king himself says, you can do whatever you want, or he just takes whatever he wants from people. We say it's Ein LeKitzvah, there's no Dina Malchus Adina. If his official representative is a crook, and he's taking whatever he wants, so there the king is responsible for his representative, and there the whole tax loses its validity. It's only in a case where there's a third party who bought the tax, and he's the one who's the crook, there we say the tax is a tax, whatever was added is a separate issue. But when the government itself is the Ein LeKitzvah, even if the tax collector didn't tell the king, there the Shulchan Aruch Rav says, if you're able to avoid the entire tax, it would be mutter to do so. Excuse me? Because just like if the king himself passed a tax which is an Ein LeKitzvah, you know, then halacha would not recognize such a tax. The government has every right to demand taxes, but they don't have the right to go ahead and pick and choose and single out one particular citizen or one particular group of citizens. So if their representative is doing that, then there's no Dina Malchus Adina. He is representing the king. And this tax collection is not being done in a consistent and fair way. Now, the Shoyal Umeishiv actually says a chiddush. He says this is only when the tax collector is a crook and he's taking extra money to put it to line his pockets. He says, Masha'enkin, if the tax collector has some reason, he suspects you're lying to him. He thinks you're hiding assets, and that's why he demands more. Even though the tax collector may be wrong, he's jumping to conclusions, you're actually being honest, so he's going to end up taking more than he's entitled to, that does not become a name like kitzvah. That's a kitzvah with a mistaken judgment. It's only when, adrabba, they know what they're entitled to and they're bedafka just trying to extort more, there we can discuss a meches de in like kitzvah. So this is the concept of dina malchus dina. This is the limitation of ein lekitzvah, and this is pretty straightforward in halacha. Well, yeah, the extra that you don't legally owe, you certainly everyone agrees that if you can avoid paying what you don't owe, you have every right to do that. This question is, if they're trying to take more than you owe, can you now go ahead and say this whole tax is unfair? And there the Ma'bit says the entire thing is unfair. Shulchan Aruch passes not like that. And we have the Chiddush of the Shulchan Aruch Rav that it'll depend on the case. So the next question we have to deal with is, why? Why is Dina de Malchus a Dina? What obligation or why does a person have to follow the laws of the land? You go through, open up a chumash, you go through it, you're not going to find anywhere that it's usher to go through a traffic light. What is the source for this kayach, this authority for a government to pass laws that suddenly halacha will recognize? So there's a very interesting machlokes rishayim, there are actually different pshatim, and there are some very mechudish dik and nafka minut l'halacha that will come out depending on which reason we will adopt. The first and probably the most famous reason for Dina Malchus Adina is based on a Ran in Nedarim. It's brought down by the Rosh and other Rishayim as well. And what the Ran explains is that the reason why you have to listen to the laws is for simply because the king owns the country. It's his land. And if it's his land, he has the right to say, you want to live in my country? You want to be a guest in my house? These are the rules. And therefore, if you come to the country, you stay there, you have to follow his rules, you have to pay the taxes. That is essentially rent for living in the country. No, Dina Malchus Adina is explaining why when the king passes a rule, you have to listen to it. And the reason for that is because he owns the land and he's setting down the terms and the conditions or the rent for staying there. Therefore, api halacha, if you live in the country, you owe the person whatever, you owe the king whatever taxes he imposed.
So you're only visiting.
Excuse me? Hmm?
So you're only visiting the country.
Oh, very good. So there's actually I gave a share once a few years ago about Dina Malchus Adina. And I stayed in the Rav's house. I was there for Shabbos. So there was another guest who was there for Shabbos. And he tells me, Rabbi, I'm not coming to your shir. Okay, why not? He says, because Dina Malchus said, I don't have these problems. I am a citizen of South Africa. I'm a resident of Canada. My tax domicile is in the Cayman Islands. And my business is in South America. So which laws do I have to follow? According to the Ran, if the point of Dina Malchus Adina is these are the rules of living in the country, L'chayrit should only apply to the country that you're actually living in. Now, Shlomo Zalman suggests that if you do business in a country, even if you're running the business from overseas, he says perhaps the government has the right to say, we control the assets or the business activity in this country and we can impose a tax. But those are the two potential about pashtus. According to the Ran, you actually have to be living here for to be subject to the rules. Very good. You know, it's everyone. You know, if you own it, why can't you set any crazy rules that you want? So it's a good question. We'll get back to it partially after we discuss some of the other reasons. But what we do see is there are limitations, that it's not across the board. But let's get back to it at the end of this year. But the question is better than the answers that we're going to suggest. Good. We'll get to that. Now, based on this, Rav Shlomo Zalman, it's really based on a Shittu Mekubetzis in Nedarim, says a very nice chiddush. He says, what would be if you're walking down the street and you wander into a building? The moment you, right after you walk into the building, suddenly the door slams shut behind you, you hear a click, it's locked, the gates come down. And the fellow tells you, okay, you're in this building, you're not leaving, you're a captive. Okay? And by the way, we charge $500 a day rent for staying in this property. Do you have to pay rent? No. You don't want to be here. You want out. He's forced you. Someone kidnaps you and forces you to stay here. He can't turn around and say, oh, but now that you're here, this is the rent. Zagreb Shalmazan, if you live in communist Russia, where they don't let you leave, there's no dina malchus adin. Because the whole koyach they have is, you want to stay, these are the rules. But if you don't want to stay, you'd love to leave, they're forcing you to stay, Zagreb Shalmazan, there's no dina malchus adin. And therefore, in any country where they don't allow people to emigrate, would not have this koyach of dina malchus adin. I actually saw another tshuva from I think it was Reb Chaim Leib Zaks, who apparently was a rav in Russia, and he left, I think, in the 50s and moved to Eretz Yisrael. But he wrote that that Russia does not have Dina Malchus Adina. He actually gives two interesting reasons. He says that it doesn't have a Dina of a Malchus. There's so much achzorius, there's so much rishus, there's no concept of chesed, he says, that doesn't have a din of a malchus. He says, even, we find in the Gemara there are cannibals. Even the cannibals, before they ate you, so the day they killed you, they gave you whatever you wanted. Because they had some idea of some, I don't know if Yerushalayim is the right word for it, but some emunah, they knew they had to do something, and in their mind, this sort of made things right. He says, but over here, we have not only do they murder people, they just disappear, they don't know what happened to them. He says, that malchus doesn't have a din of a malchus, it doesn't have a din of a malchus adina. And he says, and this was the psak that was accepted throughout Russia. So it's very yitachin. I don't know if everyone agreed to his mechudish dikar reasons, but it's very yitachin. The psak was based on this shita mekubetzus. Since they did not let you leave, according to the Ran, you would not have the din of a malchus adina. Now the Chacham Shlomo takes this a step further. He says, what happens if a person conquers the entire planet? The entire world. Now, if you own one country, so you tell the people, listen here, these are the rules of the country. These are the taxes you have to pay, these are the laws. You don't like it, go somewhere else. Now, that's very nice if you only conquered one country. But if you conquer the entire planet, so you're not giving them an alternative. You can't kick them out. Where else are they going to go? You know, the moon? So Zad Chacham Shlomo, in such a case, again, they lose their rights for Dina de Malchus Adina. So if anyone here is planning on conquering the planet, my advice to you is leave over some island in the Caribbean somewhere, at least some place where people can go, and that way you will be able to impose your Dina de Malchus Adina. What? Okay, changing the rules we'll discuss probably next week. But conceptually, if he conquers, you know, let's say the country is overrun by another king, the army takes over. So now he owns it. Same way, if your house is sold, the new landlord can come in and impose new terms. So that should apply here as well. Conceptually, we will see. There's a discussion among the Rishonim whether a king can create new types of laws or expand his powers. But that's not for this week. Okay, there is a discussion in the Rishonim whether kings can create new laws or new powers, but we're not going to get to that this week. Doesn't make a difference. I mean, okay, when it's Eilei Kitzvah, so then even if you have Dina Malchus Adina, there's no such thing. But this discussion is assuming it's a Yesh LeKitzvah, and what our discussion is why? Why do I have to listen? Just because it's fair doesn't mean that I have to listen to it. And on that, the Ran is explaining, because it's his country, it's his land, he can set the terms for a person to stay there. Yeah. So as long as the money is there and you're dealing with it, it was earned there and it still is there. I mean, if you change your mind now. Okay, if there's a new law, I hear. There is a discussion in the Rishonim. It's Tosfos talks about the Marshal, and in that time, it seems a common law or rule was the king, if a Jew would leave the country, they would confiscate all of his assets. And there, the Poskim say, certainly by Metakel, and that is called an Eilei Kitzvah. That is not a fair rule, going ahead and confiscating everything he owns just because he wants to leave. And there the Poskim say there would not be Dina Malchus Adina simply because it's Eilei Kitzvah. It's not a fair rule.
What if it wasn't against Jews?
What? I didn't see any discussion, because I don't think that, you know, it doesn't seem like there was ever such a law.
No,
but it's hard to...
For example, there were
Okay, it's hard to give a blanket psak without understanding what the rule is and whether it, if it's something which makes sense and is needed for the country, it's to maintain stability. There could be. Back then, it was simply a money grab. The king always needed money. You leave the country, we confiscate everything. That, even if it involved everyone across the border, probably still the Ein L'Kitzvah, while it's applied to everyone, but it's just extortion on a grand scale. Now, the Ran, based on this, says a tremendous chiddush l'halacha. The Ran says that we know Eretz Yisrael was distributed to the Shvatim. Each Shevet had their chelik in Eretz Yisrael. Imkain, a king, a Jewish king in Eretz Yisrael, does not own the land. And therefore, the Ran concludes, l'halacha, that Din L'Malchus Adino does not apply in Eretz Yisrael. The king doesn't own the country, belongs to Klal Yisrael, can't kick people out, and therefore there would not be Din L'Malchus Adino. Now, as far as the halacha, there are chalukei deis in Eretz Yisrael, whether we pass them like this, Ran. The Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, the Tur all say Dino Malchus Adino applies by a Jewish king. So many Paiskim say, Vaistois, they're passing not like the Ran, and they hold there's Dino Malchus Adino even in Eretz Yisrael. Others are Matkin, and they say no. Maybe it's talking about a Jewish king in a foreign country. So there, the same way, in a foreign country outside of Eretz Yisrael, there's no reason for a Yid to be treated differently than a Goy. If he's the king, he conquered the country, the land belongs to him, he can impose rules. But perhaps Eretz Yisrael would be different. So this is, there are Chalukei Deis in Eretz Yisrael. We're not in our place to paskin here for Eretz Yisrael. But I'll call upon him, if you ever see a psak or hear a psak halacha b'negei dina malchus adina from Eretz Yisrael, where they ignore dina de malchus adina, it is not a raya to chutz laretz. Because Eretz Yisrael is different according to the Ran, because the land is not owned by the king. Very good. So this leads us to the next question. In the olden days, things were pretty simple. The king conquered the land. There were a bunch of serfs that basically anyone who lived in the country basically rented the land from the king. And it was a very, very straightforward dina malchus adina. Really, is nothing more than basic property rights. And the Rishayim, the Rosh, says that in Echanami, the same way Din Malchus Adino applies, it's the same thing if you own property and you rent it to people, you can charge rent. It's the same concept. It's not a new halacha. It is simple property rights. Imkain, this, what about in the United States? Now, in the United States, I think most people assume that Mr. Obama does not own your house. Imkain, you're not sure about that. Imkain, our question is, according to the Ran, would Dina de Malchus Adina apply in a democracy, in a country where the government does not own the property and there is a concept of private ownership? Eminent domain. So it's true that in the United States you own your property, but the government has the constitutional right under certain circumstances. If they need the property, they can take it from you as long as they compensate you. So therefore, it's a bit of a proof that they really do own the land, they're kind enough to let you use it under most circumstances, but if they want to, they can take it away. Okay, I hear the raya. The problem is that the halacha is that a melech Yisrael, if he needs a property, he put it together, he's allowed to take a property and give it to his avadim under certain circumstances. Not always, that was the whole sugya with Novel. But a king, if it's needed, also has the right to seize property. Now, if the Ran says there's no dina malchus adina in Eretz Yisrael because it's not his, vayistoyis, the right to seize property if there is a public need for it does not prove to us that the land actually belongs to him. So the question here is what does the Ran mean? The land belongs to him. Does the Ran mean literally it's his land? It's serfdom where the king literally rents the property to the citizens. And does the Ran need you can actually physically kick the person out of the land? Or is the Ran's point that when a king, a monarch, conquers a country, the land belongs to him? So he may allow you to buy and sell, and there's a concept of private ownership, but he retains the underlying jurisdiction over the land. It belongs to him. He can impose rules. He can impose laws. And that these are some of the laws that are imposed. Now, there's an interesting, the end of Shin Samach Tes, there's a discussion about how the king, if you didn't pay taxes, was able to seize your entire property, regardless of the value of the property, he was able to seize it and give it to whoever would pay your taxes. Similar to what happens today on a tax lien. They can sell the property regardless of how small the tax lien is. So the Sma makes the chiluk. He says that halacha was only true when the king actually owned the land. You rented it from him. So if he didn't pay the taxes, he could take the entire property regardless of the debt. He said, Mash'enkin, when the king doesn't own the land, when it's a private property, just there's a tax, he says there halacha doesn't give the king such extreme rights. Now what's clear from the Sma is he did not understand this halacha, the Ran, literally, that everyone was renting the land from the king. Like a serf. He understood that it was private property. It wasn't rented from the king, it was theirs. But still, since there was a king on top who had ultimate bailus and jurisdiction over the country, that would be enough to create a dina malchus adina, in which case it would probably apply to the United States as well. The government has large jurisdiction, there are zoning laws, there are all sorts of restrictions about what you can do with your property. And therefore, it's very likely you could have dina malchus adina, even according to this, even according to the Ran. That's true. That's true. When we talk about the president, we don't mean the president. We don't mean that you're when you're not paying taxes. When there was a king, when you're not paying taxes, you're stealing from the king. I don't think anyone's going to argue if you don't pay your taxes, you're stealing from Obama. But it's a question of the government collectively, whoever, you know. People change every few years, but whatever this entity, this corporation or government is, they have certain rights, they're owed certain monies, and that's why the obligation would be to them. Correct. So we'll get to that when we discuss the Rajbam's shot. But it's true. But there is a government that's there to represent the people. You can call it a very large shutfis if you like, but it's a shutfis, so that's who you owe the money to. Okay, very good, very good. We'll get that's not there's not an answer. We'll get to that in a minute.
Why is a tax lien any different than a regular judgment? You owe somebody money, they get a judgment against you, they
can also
take your property.
No, but there are differences as far as if it's property is worth more and it goes to auction, if there's leftover, it officially is supposed to go back to the to, not necessarily. If you can foreclose on it, you can foreclose. Yeah, they can just seize the property. It doesn't make a difference in the underlying value. If you have a $3 tax lien on $1 million property, if they don't pay it off, you can just seize the entire property. So anyway, so that's the first discussion. Now, the truth is the Chochmah Shleimah that we just said is a stira to this. Because the Chochmah Shleimah says if you conquer the planet, there's no dina machus adina, right? Why? Because there's no place you can exile him to. Now, vaisdois, even though the king owns the entire country, if he physically can threaten the person, you don't listen, we're sending you somewhere else, Chacham Shlomo says, there's no dina malchus adina. So according to the Chacham Shlomo, since in the United States they can't exile you because you break a law, so there, according to the Chacham Shlomo, arguably you would not have dina de malchus adina, I'll call upon him according to this Ran. Now, Lohiris Nosson has a mechudish de kapshat. What he says is that it's true that in many countries they can't kick you out because you break a law. However, they could put you in jail. And he says, Mali throwing you out of the country, depriving you of your rights in the country by pushing you out the door, or Mali locking you in a dungeon. There are two ways where they can deprive you from your use of the country, where you can't be nana from it, you can't enjoy it, you can't do anything there. And therefore, Lohiris Nosson Paskins, any time where they could jail you, that is the equivalent of the ability to exile you. And therefore, Dina Malchus Adina would apply. Now, the Chiddush Lahalacha is that the Ran says that in Eretz Yisrael, where the land is owned by the Shvatim, there's no Dina Malchus Adina. Now, if the king had the right to jail people who broke his laws, then according to Lohiris Nosson, the Ran should not conclude there's no Dina Malchus Adina in Eretz Yisrael. So it's a bit Tzarachi in how he understood the Ran, but I'll call upon him, that's the Svar of the Lohiris Nosson. That's true. They don't let you die, but they don't let you enjoy the property or the freedom of the country. Whatever you own in this country, you're not being nana from it. Whatever land you have, they can stop you from having any enjoyment from it. Because they lock you up in jail, you can't go there, you can't live in that house. And okay, that's true. That's true. If there's income, I guess you'll get it.
Enochnami. What about they could force you to move a different part of the country, like Yosef, like he said, he moved all the bits around. So
that's because he was able to force them because Paray bought the land. And that's a clear case. That's a clear case of Dina Malchus Dina.
So I'm saying, well, if the whole world is owned by, he said, you can stay here. If we don't want to move somewhere else.
If the king tells you, you only have to follow my rules here, but if you want to move across the country, then you no longer have to listen to my laws? Okay. I mean, that would be an unusual law for a king to pass, that anyone who wants to move does not have to listen to him, but if there would be such a mitzvah, then erechame.
Say, you follow him, if you want to stay here, follow his rules.
Again, in that case, where if you conquer the planet, then that probably would be a good etza. We can work it out when we have to deal with it. Now, this leads us to the third svara, which is what you had mentioned earlier. There's an Avnei Nezer that says a very nice svara. He says, it's true. You own your property. The government has no rights to touch it. There's no dina malchus dina. But that's very nice if you buy a few hundred acres somewhere in the Midwest and you never leave your house. However, if you want to go ahead and you want to use the streets, belong to the government. The parks belong to the government. So once you're using any public areas, once you're using property that belongs to the government, there, he says, the Ron will apply. You want to use public land? Okay, these are the terms that the government has the right to set. And therefore, even if we ignore the whole back and forth, the whole discussion about whether the government does own your property, doesn't own it, he says, the bottom line is, since everyone is nen and using public property, there, l'kulayama, even the Ron would agree, dino malchus dina would apply in a democracy. Now, as we're going to see later on, there's a discussion which we haven't really touched upon is how far Dina Malchus Adina goes. What types of laws are included in Dina de Malchus Adina? And we're going to see there is a shita among the Paiskim. Again, it's a machlekes, but there is a shita that it applies only to property, only to rules concerning karka. The pshat in those rishonim are based on this Ran. If the whole Dina Malchus Adina comes from the fact the government owns the land, it is possible their rights are limited, so they can tell you how to use this land. They can charge rent, if you will, for being here. But to start telling you what to do in your personal issues or private issues between another person, that they may not have the right to do, that's a discussion we'll get to next week. But any time we discuss that shita has to be following the Ran, that the whole koyach of Dina Malchus Adina comes from the fact that they actually own the property. It also comes out is that if we discuss Dina Malchus Adina, probably the strongest case is areas that deal with roads or public property. And therefore, a person speeding on a highway, that probably has the strongest Dina Malchus Adina. Since the highway certainly belongs to the government, and the government sets down rules under which you're allowed to use the roads, even without this chiddush of Dina Malchus Adina, the same way you understand if you visit someone's house and he says, you're welcome to stay, but please do not rearrange the furniture. This is how you can use the property. You're bound to that. So arguably, if they say you can drive on the streets, but there's a limit to how fast you can go, this l'chayr would have a very strong and compelling dina malchus adina because their property certainly belongs to them. Okay, so let's get back to that after the Rajbam. The question over there really is what happens if there's a law that nobody listens to? If you drive 56 miles an hour and there is a policeman behind you, he will honk. So in that case, it is difficult to say, since it's on the books, there's Dina Malchus Adina. But the moment you're going fast enough where it's questionable, where they could give you a ticket, where they're, some people do listen, some people don't, that's a whole different discussion. Again, that we'll have to get to, but we're going to have to do the other pshatim first, and then we'll get back to the... No. If you hold Dina Malchus, if I tell you, you're welcome to stay in my house under these terms. So if you breach the terms, even if I don't catch you, you're a ganav. You're a shol shloim midas. I never gave you permission to move into my house under these circumstances. I'm happy to have you as a guest. I didn't bring you in as an interior decorator. So according to the Ran, it's actually a good point to discuss. According to the Ran, when a person violates a law, what isser is he being over? What is it? Where does the Torah say you must follow laws? According to the Ran, Shulchan Aruch Rav makes this cheshbon. You're over an Isser Gezel, not on the taxes. Taxes maybe is hafkoy savah, maybe there's, but you're over an Isser Gezel on the country, because you have no business using the country if you're not honoring the terms of the agreement. So Shulchan Aruch Rav explains that if they say this is the cost of living here, and you live here without paying that cost, you're basically, the entire use of the property, the use of the country, is begezel. And the same thing can be argued if there's a ticket, if there's a speed limit. They say you're welcome to drive on the street up until this speed. Past that, they never gave you that authorization. You could argue it's a shor shloi midas on the actual street. Okay, so if you're depending on how cynical you are, there are people who believe that the reason why there's a speed limit is they're very happy. They don't care how fast you go. They want to be able to balance their budget by giving tickets to anyone who speeds. Now, if that's what you believe, that it really they're giving permission to drive 95, they're happy when you go 95 because it means more revenue. Okay, so then I hear it. Then they're not mockery. They just want you to pay if you get caught. So if you pay, you get caught, you're fine. But if you're a little bit less cynical and you think they have the speed limits because they don't want people driving 95 and getting into accidents and people getting hurt, pollution, or whatever the other reasons are. So then if it's their road and these are the terms that they set, you can use it up until this speed. Okay, they should have the right to do that. And violating that should be a problem of gezel. Good. That goes to the other discussion. If everyone does it, if it's a situation where if you go 30 and a police will honk, that I hear, that it may be a law on the books, but if everyone in the government and everyone in the citizens say, I don't care what it says in the books, this is the mitzvah, I can hear such a svara. But the fact that when you're on the parkway, if many people drive a certain speed and there are some people that go faster, that would not be a heter. I mean, there are any law that was passed, there are always people that broke laws. That doesn't mean it's not a law. It's only when you hit the situation where even the judge is going to honk. So there, I hear the svara. Pashtus, because they all have the federal government and the states. You know, they both have jurisdiction over the area. They both have the right to collect taxes. They both have the right to impose laws. So there's a constitution. There are all sorts of issues where each one's how to define each of their rights and how to deal with conflicts. But it's a country that's owned or controlled by two separate entities. Historically, there were all sorts of, there were dukes, and there were kings, and there were princes, and there were all sorts of different levels of government as well, which there is discussion in the Poskim of where Din Malchus Din applies. It's very hard to translate it today because it's not clear exactly what control each person had. But conceptually, you can have a country that has two owners, two partners in it, same way you can have a property that's owned by two people. Okay, so this was the Shita Saran, that the idea of Dina Malchus Adina, the Kayach, arises from the king or the government's control and ownership of the land. Now, how did they acquire the land? How did it become theirs? So this the Ran doesn't address. But there are other Achroinim, or there are some Rishainim also, that when they explain Dina Malchus Adina, they say the reason is because of Kiyush Mocham, that if there's... There are many ways of being kind of something. Conquering a country in war is a way of being zoichin it. So Pashas is not, they're not arguing on the Ran, they're really explaining the Ran. Because the king conquered the country, there's a kibush mochama, now it's his. Once it's his, now the Ran says, as the owner, he has the right to set down the terms and conditions under which you're going to live in his land. So the kibush mochama is really just an explanation why it became his in the first place. It's not at all a steer to the Ran. This is the first sheet in the Rishonim. The second sheet is the sheet of the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, and his reason, I think, for today, it sounds a lot more gishmak in many ways. He says that all of the taxes and hagas and mishpatim and blachim, this is in Bav Basra Daf Nun Daled. He says, Dinuhu, shekol bnei hamalchus mekabum aleihem meiritzoinom chugei hamelech. The reason why you have to follow the law is everyone of the in the country has willingly accepted the laws. Hilchah din gomerhu, ve'en la'maksik b'mamon chadeira p'yichoy kamelech hanog b'ir mishnam geza. Zok the Rashbam, it's like a social contract. Because everyone in the city, everyone in the country voluntarily accepted the authority, the jurisdiction of the government, because they've accepted the laws, they now become binding. And dina d'malchus adina. Now what it sounds like is, the Ran is talking about some dictator or a monarch who sacks the country, he owns it, he imposes his law. The Rishbam sounds like a representative democracy. Everyone's all happy. They all voted the person in, and that's why you have to listen to the laws. Now, it's very nice, but the Rishbam, I was actually explaining, a Gemara clearly is not talking about a representative democracy. The Rishbam is talking about a king, a monarch, a dictator. But afal pi kein, the bottom line is, people accept the jurisdiction of the country. They realize there has to be some government body or somebody that's creating that's making uniform laws for everybody, and therefore people accept it. Again, I don't know what's with the Tea Party, but I'll call bottom norm. Derech klal, people are accepting the laws of the country, and that's why it becomes binding. Now, why is this true? Why can't a person get up there and say, "I don't accept the laws of the country"? It's very nice everyone else did, but what binds me to everyone else's decision? So the Rishbam does not explain this, but there is a concept of a takana, of a tzibur. Whenever you have a tzibur, whenever you have a rabbim that's there together, the halacha is the rabbim has the right to make laws and impose them on the yachid. Otherwise, there's no way people can live together. So presumably the Rishbam is the same idea, that since there's a tzibur, since everyone collectively decided that they're going to follow the rules of the country, therefore, Dina Malchus and Dina would apply, and they're binding on all the citizens. Correct. That's the Chiddush here. But we were talking about Goyim, and still this halacha would apply. Now, some even compare this to Hefker Bezdin Hefker. Now, no one's saying a king is a Bezdin, but their point is that a Bezdin, the same way that a Bezdin is responsible to run the affairs of the Tzibur, and they have the right to make takanos and rules in order to make Seder. So when the person or the entity running it is a Goyisha king, the same idea will apply. People accept it willingly, and therefore that is why Dina Malchus Adina. So according to the Rishbam, Dina Malchus Adina has nothing to do with the fact that king or the government owns the land. Dina Malchus Adina arises from the fact that everyone willingly accepts it. The power is derived from the fact that people gave it to him, as opposed to a simple property right that he has right to do what he wants because it is his country. Now, according to the Rishbam, it's much more understandable why meches de'ein le'kitzva is not binding. Because it's true, people gave the government right to make laws, but they only gave them the right to make fair laws, to go ahead and start picking on certain people and discriminating or doing ein le'kitzva, that no one was ever makabel miritzayinim, no one ever voluntarily agreed to subject themselves to that kind of extortion, and their dina malchus dina would not apply. Okay, so the minority agreed to accept, even in the case of takanos, we find that they're allowed to make takanos that are good for the tzibur. But where the takana is a revach lahai and a hefsed lahai. You know, if the 99, if it, no, so there's some cases where if we would all pass the law that anyone whose last name starts with an M has to pay double taxation. So that's a revach, it's done, which is explicitly at one person's expense and another person's benefit. In contrast, if you're going to make rules or make seder, we need this amount of taxes. The government needs taxes. So that applies to everyone across the board. If you're going to make rules, and you can't have five bars in the same block. Now, it's true, ultimately, someone will have a hefsed, but it's not picking on one particular person. So in those cases, takanos will apply. But when even in Klal Yisrael, even when there's a tzibur, when they go ahead and they're making rules which are specifically aimed to benefit one person and hurt someone else, there would not be Dina Malchus Adina. We mentioned last week a discussion about rent control. This is going to be part of this is going to be part of the issue.
You mentioned Dhamma Sama. So according to Brahma, the Kamas Rishus, the Kamas
Mitzvah, would there be a difference? No, we're talking about a Goy. We're talking about a Goy who sacked the country. There was no mitzvah involved. Well, if he conquers an area that is not part of Eretz Yisrael, then it's his. Then you can have Dina Malchus Adina. But if he's conquering part of Eretz Yisrael, which is Nitin L'Shvatim, there's no Dina Malchus Adina.
Would it make a difference if someplace else
the issue is who owns the land, not how he got it. So if the land is owned by the Shvatim, according to the Ran, there'll be no Dina Malchus Adina. If it's owned privately by the king or whoever he gives it to, there Dina Malchus Adina would apply, even according to the Ran. Now, what's behind this machlokes? We have two pshatim. The Ran said it's because the king owns the country, therefore in Eretz Yisrael you would not have Dina Malchus Adina according to the Ran. The Rashbam said everyone voluntarily, it's a social contract, everyone agrees voluntarily to accept the laws. What's pshat in the Ran? Why? What's wrong with the Rashbam's svar? Zogt Chassam Sofer, a very nice chiddush. He says, it's true. If you want to know traffic laws, if you want to know where you're allowed to go through a red light, there, everyone, the Rashbam's svar is a very compelling argument that there has to be a seder, there has to be some sort of rules or some sort of mahalach advarim, and therefore, Zogt Chassam Sofer, when it comes to stam laws, everyone would agree to the Rashbam Svara. You don't have to come on, you don't have to look at who owns the country. But Frederick Sam Seifer, how many people here willingly pay their taxes? Frederick Sam Seifer, taxes no one's interested in doing. No one's makabel me, or it's soinam hatoiv. No one says, you know what, we feel this civic responsibility, we're going to pay our taxes. Frederick Sam Seifer, when it comes to taxation, which no one wants to pay taxes, there we need the Ran. The other Ran says, the king says, listen here, it's my country, you don't like it, go somewhere else. When it comes to other rules, when it comes to the stam, the other rules that are there just to protect society or how to make things work, there the Ran agrees to the Rashbam, and therefore even if the person does, even if the government does not control the land, they still have the right to make the stam laws. It's only taxation where there is a mechlokes. And therefore, Zogt Chassam Sofer and Michos Yitzchak and others pass in halacha l'maisa. In Eretz Yisrael, even if you're going to say the halacha is like the Ran, which is not clear, but even if you're going to pass in like the Ran and say there's no dina malchus adina because the land is not owned by the government, hani mili in taxes. However, any other laws where the concept of dina malchus adina could apply, there we have the Rashbam Svara, that everyone willingly, there's a svara that people willingly accept the jurisdiction and the decisions of the government, and therefore the Chassam Sofer says dina mechusa dina would apply. It's only in a case of taxation. Now, what's behind the Rashbam? The Rashbam clearly says his svara even by taxes. As Rashbam is going on taxes, kol mitzvah varnoy nesi, that's what he says. All the taxes people are willingly accepted. What does the Rashbam hold? So the Rashbam holds, it's true that everyone, come April 15th, everyone grumbles about how high the taxes are. But very few people pick themselves up and move to Afghanistan. And there's no taxation there. But Teretz is, you don't want to be taxed, but overall, you sit back and think for a bit, there are some benefits to living in the United States, and therefore it's kedai, you make the decision, it's kedai to live here in spite of the taxation because of the other benefits and the other advantages of being in the United States. And therefore, the Rashbam holds, even taxes, even when it's costing you, we can say that people are makabel miritzayim hatoyv, they're makabel and atzman to bear the burden as a price to pay for living in the country.
In Eretz Israel, if there's no yoga, so if things don't go back, would Iran saying that they really caused the trouble, but if things are not going back in yoga, really, that's not being enforced. Yovel shows that it goes back to the original.
Well, whoever the original owner is or wherever it passed through, the Ran's point is it doesn't belong to the government. If it doesn't belong to the government, whoever the owner is, it's private individuals. Therefore, the government, the king, would not have the right to say, if you don't follow my wishes, I'm going to exile you. And that's why the Ran concludes there would be no dina malchus tadina in Eretz Israel. Again, we mentioned before that's a malchikus, and according to these shitas, even if you hold, like the Ran, and you hold it doesn't apply in Eretz Yisrael, still, these sheets are limited to issues of taxation. Other laws, the Kulei Amo, would have Dina de Malchus Adina. Now, these are the basic reasons in the Rishayim, or the why Dina de Malchus Adina exists, why a person has to follow the laws. What the next big question, which we'll have to deal with next week, is what is the scope of Dina de Malchus Adina? What types of laws are included? How far does the government have rights to intrude on people's private lives? And to what extent do we apply Dina Malchus Adina?